This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge. With Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective, the most Canadian and somehow most Tongan rugby podcast out there that will today be talking about Canada and Tonga.
And you know what? This isn't the first time we've done that. We've done them both in the same podcast before.
It's pretty wild, isn't it? It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
The last time we did this, we weren't joined by Carly Rae Jepsen. And I want to make the point that we are once again not joined by Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah, and like a lot of people said, like, oh, they won't be able to do it twice. They won't be able to not have Carly Rae Jepsen on their podcast twice. And you know what? We've done it again.
And look, it was a bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
There was a period where it looked like we were going to have Carly Rae Jepsen on the podcast.
Yeah.
That would have been a real problem if we had,
yeah.
We had to stick
and
with.
Look, there was points where we even nearly had another guest on the podcast, which was really problematic.
I mean, you know, I won't necessarily say that, but I would say that I am usually delighted to see Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah.
I'm usually delighted by her in general.
Sure.
But I find it a shame every single time.
Would you say that you really, 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 really like her?
Look, I'm going to cut the feeling and say that I absolutely do like Carly Rae Jepsen. But I find it a massive shame when I call her and have to talk about Canada v Tonga.
Yeah.
Which is her least favourite topic, I know that.
Yeah.
She's a fan of many things, but she's not a fan at all of Canada playing Tonga in any sport.
Even when her team wins.
Yeah, even when her team wins. She just hates it. She just absolutely hates Canada playing Tonga.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about that.
Look, I don't know. Maybe she just doesn't like Gareth Reese or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah.
By the way, who are you?
Oh, look, I've been trying to discover that for my entire life, and I'm really struggling.
Look, now's the time. Now's the time to tell us your findings.
I'm Robbie Owen, or Squidge from Squidge Rugby, or just like that twat.
Oh, you did the Squidge Rugby thing.
I do the Squidge
Rugby. I did wonder why the podcast was called this.
It's stupid. Who are you?
I'm Will Owen. I guess I'm a rugby writer and person who discusses it, or just a rugby nerd, and I work with you on Squidge Rugby.
Yeah, and welcome to that.
Thanks.
So, as I say, the game we're going to be covering today is Canada and Tonga's first ever World Cup match. As we said, the two of them go on to play again in the 2011 World Cup.
Yep.
And they go on to play three times between these two dates. But what we're talking about today is the second meeting between these two teams. And yeah, the first time either of them have ever played in a Rugby World Cup. And I'm going to say, right, there's a lot to get into. Somehow, we were just mentioning this before getting on air.
Yeah.
This is the game we've each got the most notes on.
Yeah.
Right. And when I looked at the score and saw this is Canada 37, Tonga 4, I thought...
It's funny enough that Tonga score 4 points.
Yeah.
I found that a really funny scoreline, like aesthetically. Like the title of this podcast is funny because the number four is in there on its own.
This might be the only episode we ever do with a scoreline of 4 points.
It's very possible. Yeah, we'll get back to people on that when we've completed the podcast.
Mm. Yeah, which is coming one day.
Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah, but I looked at the scoreline of that before, you know, when we were divvying up the games, and I thought we might not have much to talk about on this.
Yeah.
I was originally having a guess. It didn't happen, and, you know, Carly Jackson tried to burge in, and we couldn't let that happen to her because we care about her too much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we then... There's so much to talk about in this game.
Yeah. So I messaged you, because I started watching this game early today before you did, and I sent you a message saying, oh my God, this is incredible. About 5 minutes in, this is going to be a really, really good game to jump into. I bet you weren't expecting that.
No, I wasn't. I was really surprised. And yeah. I thought another dog was getting on the pitch.
No, sorry. There was no dogs on the pitch, as far as I noticed, at least.
I mean, there were some players with real dog on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. But I knew we were in for a promising game. As soon as, like...
Sorry, wasn't with real dog the former All Blacks fullback?
Yes. I don't get the joke.
It's real tag.
Oh, I'm really glad I got you to explain that, because usually I would just gone yes haha and moved on, having not understood the punchline. I'm glad I got you to explain that one anyway. Yes, so I knew this game was getting off to a good start as soon as this kind of presenter lady came up at the start. Did you kind of clock this?
Go on.
She had a real Will Greenwood style mannerism to her, and I enjoyed that, and I'm just going to play like about 20 to 30 seconds of this, and then you can talk me through it.
With a real atmosphere here at the park today, and none more so than the Canadians. They've got a whole group of supporters down here, and they're making themselves very visible. It's the war paint. Jim's down here from Canada. Apparently this is a tradition in Canada. It's sort of the equivalent of our haka. They put the war paint on, and they know what's happening. Just waiting for the teams to come out on the field. Everyone's very happy. It's amazing what the sun does.
There is more to it, but I just think that was a really good insight.
It is asking one of the co-hosts a question about whether they've ever eaten tofu away from being Will Greenwood, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, no, it really is. So,
my favourite point in that is saying that Canada fans are making themselves very visible. Because really, famously, Canada fans have always struggled with light refraction issues.
The other thing I enjoy is that painting a maple leaf on the face is their equivalent of the haka.
Yeah.
Like, it's meant to scare off the opposition.
You should mention that as well, right? When they say it's war paint, right, you think it's going to be like, you know, swathed across. Like, we've seen South Sea Island players play with that.
Yeah, before. Yeah, yeah.
And it is terrifying. And, you know, you've got images of war paint. It isn't. They have painted a maple leaf on their face. It's face paint.
Yeah, yeah, which they've clearly managed to get mixed up somehow, which is incredible. And the thing I like the most is them saying that when they have the paint on the face, they know what's going on.
It's better than the alternative. It's better than not having the paint on your face.
Yeah, sure.
A real, real struggle sometimes. It's a nice day at the park today, and it is amazing what the sun can do.
It really is. So yeah, this game...
I love that. It's such a different introduction. Every World Cup match now is introduced as the most intense encounter ever.
Yeah,
whereas there she says, everyone is so happy.
We're all here to have fun.
Everyone is so happy. Yeah. We are so happy to be watching Canada v Tonga, Don't Tell Carly Rae.
Yeah, yeah. So this game, yeah, was played at McLean Park in New Zealand. And what I like, just before the teams come out, you can see two Tongan supporters stood on the pitch for some reason with a banner that says, yes. Come on, Tonga, we in the World Cup.
No, we in World Cup.
Not even that.
Say that.
We in World Cup.
And it also, they've missed the E off come on. So it's come on,
oh, really?
Tonga.
I didn't even clock
we
that.
We in World Cup.
Maybe they meant to put that E at the end of we. Mm. So it's like we, it like urinates inside the Webb Ellis trophy.
It's just encouragement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Come on, Tonga. We in the World Cup.
It's a bit like early text messaging when you didn't have, you know, you had to pay per letter.
Yes.
That's the kind of thing that's going on there. And they just ran out of space very early on.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was probably it. I think they probably meant to have like a real motivational letter on there, then realised how little space they had and just thought, we're just going to have to minimise it. We in the World Cup.
I went to an anti-Donald Trump protest, which will surprise no one that's listened to enough of this podcast, a few years ago when he was doing his visit to the UK. And I saw someone who had a banner that said, Donald Trump is a dick he. Because they'd run out of space to put the 8D for dickhead on.
I think that even Donald Trump would have been able to decipher that's what it meant.
I hope so.
Yeah. Although dickhead's not a very well used word in America, is it?
It sounds really weird in American accents when they say dickhead.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think because you traditionally would pronounce it dickhead, right?
Yeah.
You'd drop the H.
Yeah.
And that isn't really a feature of American dialect.
No, no. So they'd have to pronounce it dickhead, wouldn't they? Which doesn't sound right.
Much emphasis on the H.
I'm trying to remember what film it is where Emma Stone says the word twat. Is it Easy A? Yeah. Which is because she says it like twat, which is the weirdest sounding thing I've ever heard, and it's been ringing in my ears ever since.
And like Stanley, that was where I learned what that word actually means.
Oh, really?
Because Stanley Tucci explains it. Because traditionally, right, I have a long-standing theory, and I apologise partly for this for anyone that wants to focus on the rugby.
Yes.
But I think twat is the best swear word because
it's definitely up there.
It's the most satisfying.
My favourites are twat. I think prick's a great word.
Prick's solid, but it's less versatile than twat.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Twat is superb as a verb.
Yeah, yeah. And there's different ways you can say it. You can say it with a hard T. You can say it without.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's so good. It's so good. It's the best swear word.
And like you can stick like, oh, you daft twat. Like that sounds great, doesn't it?
Exactly.
You can put other words with it.
Because it can, depending on how you emphasise it, it can sit anywhere on the scale of like endearing to actually quite harsh.
Yeah, yeah.
Like how you say it, what words you put around it.
Sure, yeah.
And as I say, just saying I twat at that is funny.
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah.
One of the things I hope when I'm dead and gone, one of my real points of legacy, one of the things I'm remembered for, is coining any big kick in rugby as a recharge thunder twat.
I thought thunder twat was already a thing before.
It probably is, but I said the recharge thunder twat.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking that. And look, recharge probably deserves more credit than I do for actually thunder twat.
Yeah, sure.
I feel like
I heard thunder twat said by friend of the pod Lee Calvert from Blood and Mud like years ago. So it feels like the sort of thing he would coin. Not to discredit you, because you know the Rhys Hodge thunder twat is a different thing. But yeah, we could go on. That's fair enough. We could go in circles around this. But who knows?
Yes.
We'll have to get Susie Dent on this.
A slight tangent. Someone tagged me when Susie Dent was doing a thread on the word shithousery. Someone tagged me. And I had a brief, very brief exchange with Susie Dent.
Oh, did you?
About, like, what would be my use of thunder twat?
Oh, that's cool.
No, not thunder twat, of shithouse.
Yeah, so did she reply to you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's quality.
Me and was like, oh, that's interesting. And I replied to my thing. And she was like,
that's brilliant.
Like,
she's actually, in with this. She's been on Peter Crouch's podcast to explain the etymology of the word shithousery.
Yeah.
Which I think is an excellent use of guestage from our direct rival in the sports podcast world, Peter Crouch. We were once one spot below him on sports podcast for one day. And that was where we peaked, obviously. And I don't think he'd put on an episode for months. But anyway, so yeah, you were saying about the teams.
Yes, so obviously the teams run out shortly after we've talked through, I think, the opening of the thing.
Yeah.
The teams do then run out, and I'll tell you what, right? That thing Japan did of lining up for the national anthem starting to catch on, because both teams do it here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to go far, this concept is. And I think we'll come on to the teams themselves in a second. But I mean, I think both teams really go for the anthem, particularly Canada, sing it very loudly and very passionately. And
Canada is really interesting because it's one of the very rare examples where the team seem to sing as one. But they sing, you can hear a song with an accent.
There's a
very pronounced Canadian accent on that anthem.
Yeah, yeah. And they're somewhat tuneful as well, the Canadians. So I've got a lot of respect for I think that puts you 1-0 up.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was a really good anthem by Canada. Tonga then stand in a line and the anthem plays and they all look slightly sad. And if anyone has watched this back or wants to go and watch just the opening few minutes and watch this anthem, it feels an awful lot like the ending of a black and white film where a load of men line up looking pointive about what they've just done.
Sure, sure.
As this like quite sad and very old-timey music plays over the top.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's then completely counteracted by the disco sippy towel.
Yes.
I adored this. The sippy towel has got so much scarier in the last 40 years. But this time, like, they were doing spinny round moves. They were doing, like, funny, like, Bee Gees-style hand jives. It was really exciting.
And it looks very jazzy. Like, they have improvised this.
Oh, so it's very 80s. It's, like, it very much makes sense that this is a dance that they were doing while Depeche Mode were in the charts.
It does. There's one of them in particular that is jogging up and down the whole way, yes! His hands like he's that. Milking a massive invisible cow.
I love that. Yeah.
Whilst everyone else has stood still.
It was so much fun.
Up and down, going.
I genuinely don't think I've enjoyed like a Pacific War dance pretty much as much as this ever before. It was phenomenal. I loved
they
it.
They look like
they're having so much fun.
Yeah. The guy on the end in particular looks like he's having a great time. There's a few of them are out of time. They're doing little spins. I'm just watching it back now, and it's glorious.
Roly-polies.
I completely missed that bit. There's a bit where they pair off with a partner and do like a joint bit together. They do like a spin
like
around
Dirty Dancing.
Other. Yeah. Where they've got to go and practice the lift in the ocean. Oh. I've had the time of my life.
Watching Tonga do the sippy towel.
This is so good.
It's brilliant. I love it.
None of them can quite decide what they do immediately before the jump at the end that was traditional at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so some of them kind of like do an elbow forward. Some of them kind of step forward. Some of them just do a little dance. As I say, the guy on the end is having the best time.
Yeah.
He is just kind of jiving along and he's got like his shoulders rolling and bopping. The disco sivitar is the best way of describing it.
It's so unbelievably great. Yeah, as I say, I really wish that all teams had that much fun, but like immediately before starting a game of rugby nowadays.
I think every team should do something that will make all 15 players happy
immediately
beforehand. It's amazing what the sun can do. But
yeah. All I'm saying, that. Six Nations coming up, get Finn Russell to juggle on the halfway line with all the players watching.
Get everyone else involved. Like Ali Price can chuck him new items.
Yeah. It's just like, start playing Red Arse with Johnny Sexton.
Yeah. I can add, Jamie Ritchie will spit on each thing secretly before Ali Price checks
it. Whatever makes everyone happy.
Yeah. I think the Welsh team should beat England before playing them.
Yes, I think so. I think so.
Because that's what makes them happy. If we're going to do what makes them happy, Dan Bigger can complain to the referee before the game even starts, which he now can do because he's captain.
Yeah. I was thinking this, like, how quickly do you think Matt Carley wants to back out of having that Wales-France game now?
Oh, mate, yeah.
He knows what Dan Bigger was like when he's like, not allowed to talk to him. Now, what's he going to be like?
For anyone that didn't remember, that missed this, the last time Wales played France in Cardiff, Dan Bigger said to Matt Carley, who was a referee then and is refereeing this year, he finished at the end of the game. Dan Bigger said to him, "This is why none of the players like you."
Yeah. We have addressed this on the podcast before, quite a while ago.
Yeah. And I'm just adding context.
Given this is relevant again now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, that's all coming up.
Yes.
In the meantime, the two teams line up. And should we talk about the team?
Let's talk about the team. There's a lot to unpack on these team sheets, more so than usual.
Should we do the Tonga team first? Because I think there's less to talk about in the Tongan 15.
You reckon? Okay. I mean, there's a lot to talk about in both, I think. But
I think the Canadian 15, I've got a lot to talk about.
Okay. Let's start with the Canadian team in that case. So, in the front row, they have a couple of names that are somewhat familiar, where you've got Afu playing at hooker, who is, I've checked, of no relation to Josh Afu. But on the tight head, you have Hakatoa Tupo, who is the father of Taniela.
See, I only noticed this when we started recording and I was looking at the team sheet.
Yes.
I didn't realise that Taniela, and I was hoping you'd look this up so I didn't have to.
It took me a while to find it, but on his Wikipedia page, it lists his children and the word Taniela is on there.
Right.
So, you know, I can only assume that is the very same Taniela Tupo who is now playing tight head for Australia.
So is he known as the Tongan Odin?
The good thing is, I know that you've only had a few minutes to line that one up, so...
Yeah. Oh, that was instant.
Well done. Also in the pack, so they've got a powerful back row of Tu'uta, Valu and Fotu. Now, the Tongan captain, Fakahau Valu, is the father of Aiseli Aivalu, who is Japan's tight head.
Yes. His dad had played for Tonga. I didn't put that together.
Yeah, that's him. That's him.
I didn't spend much time looking at the Tongan team. There was an awful lot to get into. Okay.
Yeah. Which is phenomenal. Look, for context, Aivalu is one of my favourite tight heads in world rugby.
Oh, he's superb.
I previously mentioned on the pod my friend Ryan, who I play with. He described Valu as the Japanese fridge, which is a description that has stuck in my head ever since. He's just a really good, like, when we eventually coach the Barbarians, he's going to be in our team. And that's a when, not an if, as we discussed before.
Yeah, absolutely. No, him and Nakajima are the most disco pair of replacement props available.
Yeah.
Both either, you know, like, Nakajima is half Tongan, half Japanese, and you've never seen you know, if you were to imagine a half Japanese, half Tongan man, he is what it would look like.
Yes.
You know, and he is exactly that.
Yeah.
And then Ivalu, obviously, I think is...
Oh, they're both so much fun.
He is Tongan, but, like, he took the I part of his name. Valu is his birth surname.
Yeah.
I is his wife's name, which he added because he wanted to come across as more Japanese, because he considers himself Japanese.
Which is incredible. I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they're both great scrummagers, really good around the park, really fun players, those two.
And... Ivalu is a rare exception, again, as we talked about before, moved backwards, moved to a lower number than his father.
Yeah, which is a really interesting thing. So there's more of that going on here, in fact, because off the bench comes Lameki Vaipulu, who is the father of Ma'ama, who is current Tonga number 8.
Yep, played in the World Cup.
Yeah, plays, and yeah, this fella, so his dad Lameki plays in the back line.
Yeah, his son currently plays for Cast.
Yes.
Also on the bench, but doesn't get on, is a very familiar name, Manu Vunipola.
Yes. The uncle of the other Manu Vunipola, Mako Vunipola and Billy Vunipola.
Yes. I mean, a very familiar name to, I think, all of rugby.
Yeah.
However, there is, if we move over to the Canadian team,
yes,
another dynasty.
Yes, there is.
I think an even more, an equally impressive, at the very least, dynasty.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So they are captained by Hans de Goody.
I didn't know he existed. Well,
no, neither did I.
I presumed that, you know, Sophie de Goody had a father.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that he'd played for Canada.
Have you looked up the Goody family?
I have, as of today.
Yeah. So, it's incredible.
Yeah. So Sophie's older brother, Tyson, got 2 caps for Canada in the Pacific Nations Cup of 2015.
And is played a great number of sevens tournaments for Canada.
Yes.
A sevens player primarily.
Yeah.
So Sophie de Goody, to mention, is a current Canada women's international.
Yeah.
Probably their best player, their seven-out player.
Aged only 21 as well.
She's 22 now.
22 now. Yeah. So she's plays very young and is extremely promising.
Yeah, plays for Saracens in the Premier 15s.
Yeah.
Plays lock for them and then plays number 8 usually for Canada.
Yeah.
Kicks goals. I mentioned in the team of the year thing, she was actually quite close to, you know, being contagion of handball.
Sure,
standout locks there were last year.
Yeah. Deserved mention. Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
Her older brother, Jake, who was born a few days before this game,
yes,
played for Canada at age grade levels alongside Lucas Rumble, but didn't win a full cap. There's an interview with Sophie where she said Jake was always the best of the three of them, but
really
was hurt by so many injuries that he just never got anywhere.
Oh,
just,
okay. Like, senior okay.
And then their mother, Stephanie White, or Stephanie White de Goody, as she then became, was the first ever captain of the Canadian women's team and went on to also be the first captain at the first Women's World Cup in 1991. What a power couple.
Just think about it. In 1987, you've just heard that both the men's and the women's captains for the Canadian team have had a child together. Like, how incredible is that child going to be? And then naturally, they've had a couple more. And here we are now with Sophie being a force on the world stage. But like, there's the other, of course, because there's Canada have a fly half called Emily de Goody at the minute, who I assumed was also the same, but she's married into that name, I found out today.
Oh, really?
So she married Andrew de Goody, who it doesn't seem like a son of Hans, so must be a nephew or something.
No, they've only got the 3 children.
Yeah, yeah. So I assume Hans has a brother or something, right, or a sister.
I couldn't find anything on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I found it very difficult to track down as much information as I did. Of course, Emily de Goody played against Wales in the autumn, and we both looked at each other like, oh no, there's another one.
Yeah.
Thinking it was a sister of Sophie. But of course, we're used to that in men's rugby. When you see like a rare name, you think, oh, are they related? And you don't think of it as being via marriage. So yeah, that's an interesting thought. But yeah, the de Goody family is full. It is stacked with strong rugby names.
Yeah, as strong a dynasty as rugby has, I think.
Yes.
It's an extremely, extremely firm kind of link through this.
Yeah.
Yeah, running through this Canadian team. And yeah, Hans de Goody was one of 2 real veterans in this Canadian team. So he had, prior to this World Cup, you know, he retired after this World Cup. This was his last run of games. He won 24 caps in all.
Okay.
For reference, right, his wife won 17 caps, which is really impressive in an era where there were basically no women.
Yeah, I was going to say, that must have been across several years at that stage. Yeah.
Tyson got 2 caps for the you know, senior men's team.
Yeah.
Jake never won a cap for the senior men's team. Was, you know, played A grade for Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, played in the back row with Lucas Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
As a, you know, from the team sheet I found. And then Sophie currently has 9 caps.
Right.
And obviously that's harmed by 2 years where Canada didn't get the game during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So she's probably going to overtake both her parents.
You'd imagine so.
But, you know, at the minute, Han stands as the most caps in the family. But what a family to be looking at this point.
Yeah.
Hans, prior to this, had played for Cardiff for a few years. He played for Cardiff against the All Blacks in 1978. He made his debut in 1974 for Canada, so this was his 13th year of international rugby.
Quite seriously impressive. Yeah, yeah.
However, it pales in comparison to, at 12 for Canada, is Spence McTavish.
Spike, as he was nicknamed.
Yes. Do you know why his nickname is Spike?
Not a clue.
So, his nickname was originally... Actually, you know what? I'm going to start right at the beginning with Spence. Spence McTavish, who is a real man.
Yeah.
Spence McTavish.
He has the name, the word Tavis in his name.
Yes, he does. Means son of David. So, he was nicknamed Thumper as a child because he used to bang his forehead against the crib all the time.
Okay, this is already promising.
And I think that starts to sum up his playing style, going off the...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of having watched him play for a bit.
Tackles with his head.
Yep, he very much does. So he started playing all kinds of sports when he was a kid. He originally played soccer, baseball and basketball.
Okay.
And then took up rugby as well along the, on the side.
Right.
Apparently soccer was his favourite as a child, but he was pretty good at all of them, but like not stand out.
Okay.
He was nicknamed by his basketball teammates Arachnid.
What?
He was nicknamed Arachnid for his footwork because he was apparently very good at kind of like turning and pivoting and spinning.
Okay.
As though he had too many legs. Right.
Oh, okay. That's quite a smart nickname in retrospect.
Arachnid is a bold way to go. He then...
Spidey would have been easier, but Arachnid will do.
Yeah, exactly. That then became... The origin of the name Spike is that then became Spider, and Spidey, and then Spike.
Right, so skip a couple there.
Spike started as Arachnid.
That's quite a transformation. Get Susie Dent on that.
You think Spike is coming from Spence, because they're quite similar words.
Yeah.
No, it's coming from a word that is nothing like his name instead.
Arachnid.
Arachnid.
Wow.
So... In 1970, right, McTavish was at university at the time. I think he was sort of 18, 19. And he was playing badminton against another university.
Okay.
Because he played every sport at the time.
Yeah.
At which point, someone said, oh, you played rugby before, haven't you, to him? And he was like, yeah. And they're like, did you know the Canadian like national team is training just over there, like on the next field along? On like a camp on the somewhere on the campus,
right?
And he went, okay. So he went over and walked over to watch, and they went, "Kid, have you played rugby before?" And he was like, "Yeah." And he went, "Like, we need an extra body for practice, like an extra person just to hold tackle bags."
Oh my god!
So he went. You know, he took part in training, and then right, they invited him back to come back and train more, and just as like extra practice pitch fodder. Just to be there and take part and so on. And then they were due to play a game against Fiji that autumn, which was being played. I think they were training in British Columbia, but they were playing elsewhere in the country.
Okay.
And he then... The regular winger missed the flight to come over. And so they went, "Hey, Arachnid, are you around? We're short on a winger. Are you around?"
That's amazing.
So, through sheer coincidence and fluke, he began what went on to be the longest career in the history of Canadian rugby.
No.
He won his first cap in 1970, and he played until this World Cup in 1987.
He accidentally found a career.
He accidentally had a 17-year international career.
That's amazing. That's unheard of.
Yep.
Wow.
So elsewhere in the Canadian team, we've got a 19-year-old Gareth Reese.
Yes, which is very notable.
To be, yeah, one maybe Canada's one of Canada's greatest players of all time.
Yeah,
top
yeah.
Top point scorer of all time.
Yeah.
And one of the most famous players of all time.
Yeah, yeah. And at this point, he's on his third cap, and he's playing with a broken finger as well. So
yes.
Clearly, they've seen him in his first two caps and gone, oh, no, you're that important to us. We need you to play, even though he's only 19, as you say.
Went on to play, you know, in the Premiership and the Welsh Leagues and so on.
Yeah.
Played at quite a high level for a very long time.
Yeah.
Played right through to, I think, the year like 2001. I think he retired.
Yeah, yeah.
So, again, had quite a long international career. Not as long as Spike,
no.
As Arachnid himself.
No.
But, yeah, won his last cap at the 99 World Cup.
Yeah.
So, played in, yeah, the first five World Cups for Canada.
Sure, yeah. 87,
91, 94.
He played in a few World Cups. He played in a few World Cups. Can say that much. Yeah, and he retired a legend. And he still is considered, you know, one of Canada's best players.
Yes. You've then also got, in the team, in the back three of Tom Woods, who was actually two versions of Northampton flanker Tom Wood stapled together.
Yes, who was apparently a very famous lacrosse player in Canada.
Yes, this was bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned that lacrosse is the national sport of Canada.
Yeah.
I googled this, and it is registered the national summer sport.
Mmm, that's very interesting.
Even though it's something like actually the fifth most popular sport, it is the national summer sport of Canada,
right.
Officially.
Right, interesting. Well, with they described it as the national indoor sport, didn't they? On the commentary.
Look, he's famous for playing box lacrosse, which is the indoor version.
You would know as our local lacrosse expert.
As
somebody who has played lacrosse once,
look,
yes.
Look, I was no Tom Woods, but I was pretty good.
Yeah, sure. He wasn't playing in that tournament, I'm assuming.
They talk about him being a very famous lacrosse player who played a bit of rugby on the side.
Yeah. Got into the national team casually.
Like Spencer McTavish, who played badminton and then played rugby on the side.
Yeah, I'm getting the impression the state of Canadian rugby at this stage wasn't like... It wasn't pro, was it?
No. I mean, look, we only had one de Goody at this point, so...
It's very true, very true.
Know, in years to come, I imagine... Because obviously, at this point, Hans de Goody and Stephanie de Goody have spawned three more de Goodies.
Yeah.
I imagine in a few years' time, they'll like partner off and they'll each spawn three more de Goodies until eventually, you know, like Canadian rugby is currently struggling a little bit, but that's because they've only got one de Goody playing between two teams.
That's very true. Right?
In 20-odd years' time, we're going to be looking at a national team made up of if each of the de Goodies at the minute have three children.
Yeah.
Right? That's nine de Goodies.
Yeah, that's a good point.
At which point, suddenly you've got the spine of two teams.
Yeah, we really need them to multiply. And look, if DCH Van der Merwe could get to work as well, then that'd be perfect.
Yeah. If we can have a few more, like, filter down, some more genes filtered down.
Yeah.
Then, you know, things would look pretty
no
good.
No pressure.
We need just lots of de Goodies.
Sorry.
And
less Kingsley Jones.
Tyson. Sorry, the rest of them. Yes. Also in the Canadian team, I want to quickly point out, at fullback is Mark Wyatt, not that one.
Yeah. So they pointed out, the commentator pointed out this out at one point, like, there is another fullback called Mark Wyatt, who is Welsh, who has been playing for Wales in the warm-ups, but was not selected to come here. And I just kind of think, like, well, that's suspicious, isn't it?
Like, no. I'm a different Mark Wyatt. Look, I've dyed my hair.
I'm from Canada.
I mean,
Canada.
My hair's a different colour anyway. I didn't dye it. And then also on the wing is Pat Palmer, who I believe is the same one that would go on to play tie head for the Dragons in about 20 years'
and
time.
And star in EastEnders.
It's the same person.
Yeah. I'm glad that we can agree on that.
Yes. Okay. So, should we run into the
Let's start the
game
itself? Why don't we? We're only over half an hour into the podcast, which is usually what we do.
Yeah. Look, we had to tell Spike's story in detail.
We really did. Let's say the teams were very interesting. Basically, the first thing that happened was Gareth Rees' attempt to drop goal from about 40 yards out.
Yes.
And in fairness, we've seen much worse at the start of this tournament.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's a solid strike.
Something we haven't really seen worse of is hair. Gareth Rees's hair is woeful at this stage. With a strange mullet, but there's like weird shaved markings around the ears. It's a very confusing haircut.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, he has a solid drop goal attempt, though, and that's all that matters to me.
Yeah.
I think drop goals are the meaning of life.
That's true.
So he misses that narrowly. As I say, it's a pretty good strike.
Yeah.
And we kind of play on a bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a knock on quite early on.
Yes.
And
he bombs the Tongan fullback.
Yeah, he does kick the absolute lever off the ball.
Yeah, but he notices that Tonga can't, basically none of them can catch the ball, and he really uses that to his advantage.
Yeah, and we'll get onto this, but I think he's actually quite good at choosing when to kick and what kind of kick.
Definitely, definitely.
I think he has, you know, a good game. But yeah, so he hangs a bomb up on the Tongan fullback.
Atiaki,
thank you. And he drops the ball under some pressure, you know.
Sure.
Not a huge amount of pressure, but mild pressure.
Yeah.
1987, that was basically like an oncoming steam train.
Of course.
That was like the Tom Curry coming down the throat.
Yeah.
And the commentator then, to the scrum setting, says, now Canada do have an interesting alternate formation. Against the USA in their warm-up games, they scored 2 tries from a 10-man scrum.
From trying this revolutionary new move that he's talked about, the commentator was saying. And both commentators had an interesting kind of mosey around with this discussion, didn't they? Mm. Going like, yes, it's quite an interesting little move that Canada have tried here. And who knows, it could... Oh, wait, they've not tried it this time, but look out for it later on. As you say, a 10-man scrum. So they put two of their backs into the...
Hold on.
Scrum?
Well, okay, because they don't do it for this scrum. Right.
Do they do it later on?
They do it later in the game.
I missed this.
They do it later in the game. We'll talk about it when it gets
to the end. Okay.
Do it later in the game.
Okay.
For this scrum, they don't need it. Because it turns out you don't need 2 extra men when the 8 men you have are bloody enormous and very, very strong.
Yeah, yeah.
And absolutely blow Tonga right back over the try line.
Yes. So the Canadian scrum half... Ian Stewart scores the opening try of the game. And it's interesting what the commentators then say about him.
It's so weird to see a scrum half called Ian.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It is. But so the commentators say this about Stewart. So they say that he normally plays centre, but
yes.
Canada have chosen to put him at 9 because of situations like this, because he's very good at diving on the ball. So that's why he's playing scrum half, because their pack are really good, and he's the best at diving on the ball to make sure they secure the 4 points for the try.
He played scrum half for Canada once before this.
Right.
Which was in a loss to Japan, a 26-21 loss to Japan
okay.
the previous year. But as I said, this was his 6th cap, 4 of them at centre, 1 of them at 9.
Yeah.
Where they played basically the same back line, apart from Gareth Rees was not yet.
Okay, yeah.
Because he was 18.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, so Canada scored the first try of the game, and it is, of course, converted by Rees.
Mm.
The other thing I found quite interesting, speaking of scrum halves, so Talai Fifita is
yes.
playing 9 for Tonga. And in fairness, I think he's actually decent, Fifita. He's got some decent skills, but he can't pass off his left hand. He always spins to pass the ball from the left-hand side of the field, which... It's just incredible seeing a scrum half who plays at that international level.
There's a point in this first 10 minutes when the commentator says of a pass for Fifita throws from the touchline, what a good pass that is, as it flies straight past his fly half who reaches for it and knocks it on.
Yes. And he says, like, what a good pass that was. Like, as the ball's about to leave his hands, he kind of says it. Like,
as the ball is leaving his hand, because it, like, it isn't
predetermining
absolute, like,
it.
Bullet, like.
As a good pass, which it simply was not.
I mean, it was... If it's... By the standard of 1987, it was a quick and accurate pass. Just, it was not aimed anywhere. So it's
yes.
easy to be accurate when you're not aiming.
Sure. It found some air. And then, I guess it
yeah.
did find the hands of his 10, just
it
only
found
the fingertips.
One hand.
Yeah,
who then knocks it on. Can we talk about the Tongan 10 for a moment?
Yes. Yeah. Liava,
let's go for Liava. Because that lad is a winger.
Yes. So I thought this, because in the first half, he basically avoided all responsibility. Didn't do
yes.
any game management, none of it. No managing his forwards, nothing. And then when it came to the second half and the game really broke up, he was exceptional.
Yep. I'll tell you what, I didn't look this up during the game.
Yeah.
I am spot on.
Is he a winger?
He won 15 caps for Tonga.
Right.
This is his only cap at fly half.
Oh.
He goes on to play centre in the next 2 games in the World Cup.
Okay.
He played wing in the 2 games against Fiji earlier that year.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because...
Most of his caps in the centre.
I literally have written down in my notes in the second half at one point. Liava is evidently... A really good rugby player, but a terrible fly half.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Whenever he has to do something that is fly halfy, like passing or kicking, it's terrible.
Otherwise, his
whenever
skills
he's
are exceptional.
Playing and jamming off instinct, he's very good.
Yeah.
His skills are very
and
good.
Like,
he's got a great step on him.
Yeah.
A solid dummy.
Yeah, yeah. The thing I noticed about both of these halfbacks for Tonga, they're both better at offloading than they are passing.
Yeah.
Which is a really strange, niche
it's
kind of skill set.
South Sea Islands, isn't it?
It is a bit. It is a bit. Yeah. To be just stereotype for a second.
Stat about Leava.
Yeah.
Is he won 15 caps for Tonga.
Right.
9 of them were against Fiji.
Wow. That probably says a lot about the fixtures they were getting booked in the 80s, doesn't it?
2 against the New Zealand Maori and 1 against Samoa as well.
Right, okay.
So,
It's like during lockdown when England and France and the women played each other a billion times.
Yeah, they just kept playing each other over and over again. Like they will in the World Cup when they play in the pool stages.
It's just like, oh, what's this? Bledisloe 9? Okay, let's go, fellas.
Yeah, 5-2 test. Okay, so yeah, so I think there's a few, like, Fifita is a bit like that. Like, it's, I thought his... Whenever he tried to be a scrum half, he was bad.
Yes.
But he just one bit off a scrum. He threads for a lovely, like, beautifully weighted grubber.
Mm, yes.
And regathers it himself.
Yeah.
Which is reminiscent of that one Baptiste Ferran scored off against Italy in the Six Nations a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really, really lovely stuff. But he does quite a lot of also shit in the bed when trying to do standard passes.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And there's a few times that kind of cost them field position and stuff. And you think, like, again, like, you think, like, oh, God, if you were playing 12, you would be great in this game. But sadly, you're playing scrum half, and a lot is being asked of you right here.
And especially when you're opposite the halfbacks they are.
Because yeah.
Gareth Freese is basically inventing Ronan O'Gara
in front of our eyes. Yeah, he really is. He really, really tested the Tongan back three and their catching skills all game.
And it's funny because he's not. We've seen a lot in this World Cup of random bombs.
Yeah.
You know, of people just hanging it in the air as testers for the back three. And, you know, this Tongan back three are not great. I think Faea, the left winger, is the most impressive of the high balls.
Yeah.
It's like 2 or 3. Which, you know, shouldn't be saying a lot.
There's a couple of really difficult ones he takes in the second half, in fairness.
I thought he was actually quite solid on the high
ball. Yeah, he was.
But, yeah, Ekitaia and Asi are not superb.
No.
But Reece is also actually looking to put the ball out on the touchline, looking for space.
And he's moving them around a little bit, isn't he? Like,
he
kicks them behind them, kicks into the sun a little bit. He really finds difficult ways of making the Tongans drop the ball, and he's really making life hard for them. And in fairness, the centres are on his wavelength.
Yeah, he looks kind of slightly ahead of his time.
He looks like he's invented the game plan.
Yeah, he doesn't look necessarily like a modern player, but he looks like a player about 15 years ahead of play was in general. And I recognise I've now said that about 3 fly halves in this tournament.
Yeah.
But I think that's partly because a lot of the players in this tournament are terrible.
Yeah.
So Hirao, Grant Fox and Gareth Rees stand out because they're playing with a distinct style and tactics and thought to their game.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, I 100% agree. I did enjoy it because there's just something about Gareth Rees' body language where you could kind of tell that he was actually thinking about this. And it might also be his legacy and stuff. But then again, I didn't get that impression from Michael Leiner, so who knows?
No.
I did have a think where I was like, we've seen like England, Australia and the All Blacks play. And Gareth Rees might be the best 10 in the tournament so far.
I think Hirao is still the best.
Oh, of course. Of course, Hirao. Above Grant Fox. We're agreed on that much anyway.
Yes.
Even though Grant Fox was actually good. Anyway, so Canada get another try.
Oh, it's a lovely try.
It is. It's a really good try. It's a really good try. So it's Palmer who gets the ball and does a few really nice steps where he kind of stabs off his right foot.
Offloads inside.
Stewart.
Two
brilliant dummies by Stewart. What I
really
like about
this
is the way he completely mugs off his opposite man. I think it was Fialia who was covering for him. And he throws that dummy, and as soon as the Tongan winger realises that he's been sold, he turns around and then straight away Stewart gives the pass. And it was really nice. And it's a good bit of skill to make sure that pass goes backwards as well, because it's difficult to thread it around the man.
Yeah, he then got Rob Frame, the flankers, kind of wrapped around on the outside and does a big theatrical dive in the corner.
Yeah. Of course, at first I thought it was Roddy Frame, lead singer of Aztec Camera.
It is, actually.
Yeah, it is.
It actually is.
Yeah.
No, it's his dad. Everyone is someone's
dad. Oh, of course it's his dad. Of course it's his dad.
Glenn Ellis at 8, who we'll get on to.
Yes.
Jess Ennis's dad.
Yeah.
Everyone's involved. Ron van der Brink, the other lock, is actually the dad of the phrase, on the brink.
Oh, is he? Is he?
Yeah,
it's good to know.
Mark Cardinal, the The number two is actually the father of Sin.
Is he?
Cardinal Sin.
Right.
Yeah. Just so many fathers in this team.
Yeah. Well, thanks for letting me know.
Great. Stuart did really, really well in the lead up that try. Does very, very well. I really like watching Pat Palmer as well.
Yeah.
In EastEnders and here.
It's especially, I mean, even if you did stick in the EastEnders Pat Palmer, I'm sure that the opposite number, Kudus Falea, would have just as hard a time defending. Because he did not, like, as soon as somebody changed direction, even by a fraction, he just wanted nothing to do with it. It's like, oh no, I can't tackle you. I thought you were going to be stood over there. I thought you were running this way.
Look, Tonga had a player who could take a high ball. Of course they're picking him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It doesn't matter that he can do nothing else.
Once again, tackling, optional. It's just like, yeah, I'm doing you a favour here, lads.
Yeah.
I'm here to help your team. The standard's low. Yeah, that's entirely fair enough.
Can I throw out another fact about this game?
Give me a spicy fact.
Right. So this game took place, it's amazing when we look at this, right? I don't know how long we've been doing 87 for. We're still on the opening weekend of the tournament.
Yes.
This is played on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Right? And this game needed special government dispensation.
It did.
From the Tongan government in order to take place.
It did.
Because at the time, it was considered, you know, against like the values of everything in Tonga. Like shops weren't allowed to open. You know, no businesses ran.
Yeah.
Sports teams weren't allowed to play on Sundays. Swimming pools weren't allowed to open. The only thing that did kind of happen on Sundays was that TV and radio started in the afternoon.
Mm.
They had to have the mornings off and they could start in the early afternoon.
Yeah. And worship was the other thing, wasn't it?
Of course, churches. Yeah. Like the only thing that was open was sort of churches until, you know.
Yeah.
Until like 2 p.m.
Of course, no public transport as well, which is.
Yes.
Interesting.
So you had to walk to church.
Yeah.
Because it was considered, you know, it was a day for prayer and family.
Yeah.
And that was you know, what Sunday was. And that was traditional. That was part of the culture. And the Tongan government had to, as special dispensation for their players to play on a Sunday. So it was allowed to kick off providing it happened after midday. So the game kicked off at 1 p.m. local time.
Fair play.
And yeah, that was the earliest they were allowed to play this game.
Yeah. It also turns out this game was on before England-Japan, which we've covered it already on this pod. But we'll fix this sooner or later. But yeah.
England-Japan?
USA-Japan.
I was going to say, that's not for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. This kicked off, yes, before then. It's still factually right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this game actually did manage to take place. Which is a lovely thing. I do wonder a few times whether the Tongan forwards were mentally in the switched off state that not being allowed to do anything on a Sunday gives you.
Sure. I think that does make sense. There's a fun fight quite early on where there's a bit of a scuffle. And the best thing about it is that you get the referee, Mr. Clive Norling, who I really liked. I grew really fond of him, who just is a really 80s looking Welshman.
Yeah. Massive moustache.
Yes. And really sort of over-the-top hand signals, which I was really into.
Yes.
But after this fight, he goes and consults with his touch judge, Mr. Derek Bevan.
Yes!
And they have a really Welsh conversation about it, where obviously they both have thick sort of like Westphalian accents, and none of the other sort of players or anything can understand, and there's a couple of them kind of try and go in and listen to him and get nothing, and Derek explains what happens in this fight to his friend Mr. Norling, and then Norling kind of turns around and just goes, nothing out of the ordinary then, is it? And then has a laugh and cracks on with the game.
Oh man, it was such a joy to see Derek Bevan.
I know, I love him and I miss him. I'm so glad we're going to get more Derek Bevan content in this World Cup as a referee.
I can't wait to see more Derek Bevan.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people who aren't necessarily Welsh won't know the cult around Derek Bevan.
Yeah.
Who was a referee in the 80s who then continued remaining involved as a touch judge through to the noughties and as a TMO through to about 2015.
To about yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think actually he was beyond that. I think he probably was TMOing until about 2017.
Yeah, 18. He stayed for a long time. And there's a famous clip of Nigel Owens as a referee going to him as a TMO and referring something to him. And Derek's response is, there is no reason I can't give you why you cannot not award the try. And then Nigel just kind of goes, so I can give the try? Like that.
Derek Bevan is basically everyone in Wales under 30's granddad.
Yes, exactly.
But he happens to pop up on a rugby field.
Yeah.
And it's really great seeing him young.
Yeah, you know? With hair and everything.
Just, like, seeing a young Derek Bevan, it's like when granddad gets the war photos back out.
Yeah. There is a bit of
that. And there's something of like, you know, when you're a kid, you don't want to see it. But when you're our age, you're kind of going like, oh, look at you.
That's cute, isn't it?
Look
yeah.
at you, that's adorable.
Yeah.
You weren't always a doddery old man. Oh,
yeah, cuddly granddad vibes from Derek Bevan. He's very lovable, Derek Bevan, and was by all accounts an extremely respected official in all regards. And yeah, I was just really glad to see him, even if it was on the sideline. And hopefully we get a bit more of him.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Should we go on to... There's a moment in commentary not long after this, which we've slightly teased it, but...
Yes.
So the commentator, his name's Keith something, I'm not really sure. I can't remember what his surname was. But anyway, he mentions that Glenn Ellis, who is playing at number 8 for Canada, because quite often, this is rugby pre-professionalism, they often talk about what these guys' professions are. Yeah. So, for example, they point out that Vyson, the 13 for Canada, is the only salmon fisherman in international rugby at the minute.
Yes.
Which is quite fun. But in the case of Glenn Ennis, the commentator then points out, this man really wants to make it in the acting world.
Yes.
And he says, he's got the looks for it.
He was an aspiring actor. And at one point, his shirt gets ripped and we see him topless.
Yes.
And it does feel like a very Marvel movie thing to happen.
It felt queued up, didn't it? It felt like a total setup.
It felt like he was then going to go into the crowd and start handing out headshots.
Yeah.
So I assume we both did this.
We both went to his IMDb page straight away.
We both instantly went, the moment they said that, I went, holy shit.
Yeah.
And typed his name into IMDb.
And I had to check a couple of times. I had to kind of cross-reference it, check Glenn Ennis IMDb, then type Glenn Ennis rugby, and checked the picture of the matchup. It's the same guy.
No, because I did it straight away on my phone whilst the close-up of him was still on, and I was like, oh, that is clearly the same guy.
Right, okay,
his photo on IMDb. Like, yeah.
I paused it because I was amazed. And I messaged you then saying, I've just found out an incredible stat about this, which is unlike anything on the podcast.
Yep. So, Glenn Ellis in 1987 was an aspiring actor.
Yes.
Right. He went on from there to play for Canada until 1999, right? During which time he played for Suntory in Japan, where he worked for the company and played for them. And you imagine it was one of those, like, typical, like, boot money type deals where he's been playing a certain amount to play for the company. But, you know, really most of his work was the rugby. He then returns to Canada in 2000, after retiring from rugby.
Yeah.
1 year later, he moves to Los Angeles, and his acting career starts to take off.
It's phenomenal. So he's actually a really successful stuntman.
Yeah.
If you look at his IMDb, there's a lot of stuff he's been in. He's been in Deadpool. He's been in Watchmen. He's been in Justice League, Fantastic Four, Sonic the Hedgehog, Fargo, X-Men,
Godzilla, the Warcraft movie, Man of Steel. Like, he does basically all of Zack Snyder's movies as a stuntman now. He is incredibly, incredibly... He's in both Fantastic Four movies. He is an incredibly successful man. But I figure we've both picked out the same credit,
haven't
we?
What we don't know is this guy is an A-list celebrity.
Yeah.
Genuinely, this guy is an A-list celebrity.
This guy is a genuine... I mean, firstly, like, I went through his IMDb page.
Yeah.
I have seen 37 films he's been in.
Wow! That's exceptional. 37. I think I've probably seen about 5, which is about proportional, more than proportional to, you know, I think I've seen less than 1% of the films you have. So this guy has been in some big ones, you know? That says a lot about him. But this guy, Glenn Ellis, the number 8 for Canada in the 1987 Rugby World Cup, was the bear in The Revenant.
He was the bear, the number 8 for Canada in the 1987 World Cup. Was the bear in The Revenant.
Who is, like, in himself, not only, like, a well-known character in an extremely well-known and successful film, but also, like, that bear is a meme, is a very well... He's an A-lister. He's an A-lister.
Yeah.
And it's not like he just plays, like, a stunt version of him, or, like, you know, he's related, blah, 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 blah. Like, he is the bear from The Revenant. He is always that guy.
I mean, like, the bear from The Revenant is possibly the most famous scene from a non-franchise movie in the last 10 years?
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's such an iconic scene and film.
Yeah, like, Leonardo DiCaprio getting mauled by a bear,
and
right?
It's the fact that... So I'd paused this game at this point to go and look that up, and I was not expecting this. I expected it would be like, oh, he's been in like 2 films, rather than like...
Then when you see he's a successful stuntman, I kind of went
and
like,
even
oh, okay.
Going like, oh my god, this guy was in Deadpool was quite significant, let alone seeing that I literally... I'm going to show you my notes now. Oh my god, he's the bear from The Revenant is written down on there. And then...
I mean, I texted you at the time because you'd said that. I then... You mentioned that you'd done a lot of research on one player.
Yeah.
And I messaged you when I saw this saying, oh, I reckon I know exactly the player you're talking about. And then a moment later, I just said, oh my god, in all caps.
Yeah.
And I think that was the moment you knew I knew he was the bear from The Revenant.
Yeah.
The bear from The Revenant is playing number 8 for Canada in
like,
the World Cup.
There was a part of me that was thinking, like, should I tell him not to look this up so I can reveal it on the pod? But... I just didn't want to deprive you of the serotonin that comes with looking at his IMDb page and finding
that
out.
He's in the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
Yeah.
He's also in Brahms The Boy 2, which, look, I mean, there'll be like 3 listeners who think that is massive.
Yeah.
The Boy was a film that a handful of people saw.
Yeah.
And no one that saw it remembered a week later. They then inexplicably made a sequel like 3 years later that came out just after the cinema reopened from lockdown.
Okay.
And he's in it. And I want to know, he played burglar number 1 in The Boy 2. But next time, I want to watch that movie again.
And look out for burglar number 1.
Yeah, really appreciate the performance of burglar
number Glenn 1. Of Glenn Ennis.
He played a nightclub bouncer in the Liam Neeson film Cold Pursuit.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's a lot of that. Like, he's in both Deadpool movies.
Yeah.
The first one, he was a stuntman. The second one, he plays a mob
thug. How did he get the role of the bear? Like, that's a big one. Like, it's a big coup, that.
He's such a successful stuntman. You just figure he must have had a reputation.
Yeah, yeah. Just somebody who's worked his craft for a long time. And,
Yeah.
It's incredible.
He isn't part of, like, a stunt unit, by the looks of things.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, stuntmen that kind of work together as a group, and that's part of their thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to be that. He's sort of, like, an independent stuntman. So maybe that's how he got the bear.
It's interesting.
I want to know, there are videos and articles out there of him talking about, you know, acting as the bear.
Right.
And, like, getting into character as the bear and so on.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a bit like, there's an actor, and I've forgotten his name now, who was a specialist in playing apes.
Right.
And he's in this incredible Swedish film called The Square, which is directed by Ruben Östlund, who also made a film called Force Majeure, which I think is one of the best films of the last 10 years. I think it's fantastic. And his next film was a film called The Square. And there's this amazing scene where all the characters are in this kind of dining room, and a guy comes in and just starts beating his chest and acting like it's an incredibly convincing ape impression.
Right.
And that is the guy, and like he's made his entire career out of doing like CGI apes.
Oh, okay.
So he's in like all the Planet of the Ape movies,
right,
and like all of that.
Okay.
And just like... motion capture as apes.
Right.
And I wonder if Glenn Ellis is like that, and he's actually really good at playing bears.
Yeah,
like he's going to do Winnie the Pooh soon or something.
I have one last thing to say about Glenn Ellis before we get back to the rugby side of it, is that I looked at his Twitter account, and he has 253 followers, and one of them is Jamie Lyle. Which I think is,
yes!
I think is incredible, because clearly he's had the same realization at some stage. And, you know, we've had Jamie on this podcast recently and discovered that he's just as big a nerd as we are. So that really made me happy seeing followed by Jamie Lyle on the thing.
Do you want a quote from Glenn Ellis?
Yes.
There's an interview with him talking about filming the scene where he mauls Leonardo.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, that was like, stop and imagine that, right? The guy that played number 8 for Canada against Tonga in the 1987 World Cup, fast forward how many ever years, and he's lying on top of Leonardo DiCaprio in a green suit.
I was
like,
going to say,
shaking him.
Do you think he's the only person who has ever fucking battered both Isalia Ivalu's dad and Leonardo DiCaprio?
I think so. I think I would take a safe bet on that being true.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do you think it was going to become such an iconic moment? And he said, absolutely not. It was a sweaty, hard grunt of a stunt day for me, where I was physically exhausted all the time, sloughing about in the rain and mud. Short working for Leonardo DiCaprio, and understanding that the director was pretty substantial, having come off an Oscar win, he's got no idea who Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu is, that's fine. It was going to be an important movie, but seeing itself and what happened after the fact and how iconic it is was a huge surprise.
Wow, I mean... Yeah, I mean, it's a surprise for us too, Glenn.
Apparently, they spent about a month getting the scene right and getting him into like the bear thing,
right.
And getting him right for everything and getting very ready. But they didn't have contact with Leo much beforehand,
right?
So it was them kind of like prepping it on their own.
Wow.
I'll do lots more reading into this in the lead up to another episode, but
sure.
The guy who played number 8 for Canada, I want to make this point again. The guy who played number 8 for Canada in the 1987 World Cup was the bear in the reference.
Because, like, I then write in my notes, like, okay, let's get back to the game. And then I also have another point where I just go, sorry, I'm too distracted by the fact the Canadian number 8's the bear.
I was. For 10 minutes,
the bear is playing number 8 for Canada. Like,
I could barely focus. He played a hockey player in the film Little Man, which I believe was the Wayans Brothers. Yeah, it was a Wayans Brothers movie. And he played a cop.
You know what's great about this? We are one game into Canada's World Cup campaign. There's so much more of him to see now we have this context.
Oh, absolutely. Can I mention something else as well?
Go on.
He wrote a movie called Gnome Alone.
Oh, I looked at this. And
which stars Vern Troyer.
Yeah. One day I think we should delve into that as a Patreon-only episode.
Should we watch it?
I think we should do that.
99p to buy on Prime Video.
I think at some point we should do a Patreon episode where we look at that. Considering it was written by an ex-Canada number 8, I think that's justified. And we can do our commentary on it.
There's another movie he's written that's currently filming as well.
Okay.
So, phew, what
keep an eye out for
prolific
that.
Prolific guy.
Yeah.
What a multi-talented guy. He's just made a movie with Vinnie Jones, which is coming out this year.
Fair play. He's very successful, man.
Yeah. He's had a very solid career.
Yeah, fair play to Glenn.
He has the looks for it.
Yeah, he does have the looks for it, and he has the body for it, so he's done well for himself. Should we go back to the game?
We could.
I mean, there's a point where the commentator says that earlier in the day he'd spoken to Fakal Valu, as I say, the Tongan captain, and asked him his age, and Valu shrugged and said he didn't know, but he thought he was somewhere between 34 and 37.
What?
Yes. That is real. That is a real exchange that happened, according to the commentator, that Valu didn't know how old he was, but he's somewhere between 34 and 37 at the time of the game being played.
Wow. I mean, that's extraordinary.
Yeah.
He has a date listed on ESPN Scrum.
Right.
Birthday.
So maybe he's found out since.
Which is 1949.
Or he's pulled like a C6 Steve. You know, a C6 Steve like pretended that he was like... He pretended that he was like a homeless guy who didn't know when he was born and stuff like that.
Oh, yes!
And then it came out that he like produced a Johnny Cash album in the 70s, in the 80s or something. And like he was actually a really successful producer who's now doing it as a solo career and has this whole like really like humble backstory that everybody's now realises is false.
I kind of believe that he might. It seems
With Valu, yeah.
Valu.
Not C6 Steve.
No. Yeah. Took me a long time to remember who that guy is.
Yeah.
As you're talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say Google him, but don't. Google Glenn Ellis instead.
Or Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah. So pretty much the next thing that happened in the game after I regained my attention is the next Canadian try.
Yeah.
Right. And this is a sore subject for you, I know.
It is.
I think things might ease once we start talking about it.
Okay, fine. If we have to.
Do you want to know, so why is it a difficult topic for you?
Because I like rugby, Robbie.
Yes.
Owen, Squidge.
Hi.
I like rugby. And do you know what I like about rugby?
What do you like about rugby?
I really like tries. Mm. Do you know what my favourite bit is of the try?
Mm.
Where somebody puts it down, gets a ball and puts it down over the goal line. That's my favourite bit of the try.
Unless you're David Campese.
Unless you're David Campese. But the bit where the referee allegedly thinks you've put the ball down over the try line. Because believe me, there's one of those later on where that is tested. But the bit where somebody attempts to put the ball down.
Sure.
And
sure.
Where somebody scores the try. That's my favourite bit. Do you know what I don't like?
What don't you like?
The penalty try. Where it's like, oh, I'm a cop-out because none of you could be bothered to actually put the ball down and actually score the try. It's like, oh yeah, you pretended that this other team prevented you from scoring it by doing something illegal. So we're going to give you an automatic try where you still have to, at this point, take a kick under the post to make it worth 6 points, not even seven. Ugh, I hate them.
So can I offer my counterpoint?
Fine.
To this?
Fine. Whatever.
In this particular case, I think this might be the best penalty try of all time. Okay?
Okay.
It's a very low bar.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's another penalty try, at least in the history of the Rugby World Cup,
yeah, right,
that came directly from a 10-man scrum.
Did it now?
Yes.
Okay, so, this... Look, you're swaying me. You're changing my mind.
Yep. Yeah. So what Canada do, right, is they move both the flankers up into the front row. So they have a 5-man front row and then 2 backs join in as the flankers.
Okay.
Alongside.
Okay.
But then they seemed to.
So they
seem like the flankers slide forward. No, the flankers sort of start on. Wait, no, hold on. Let's start again. And leave this all in, because I'm trying to remember how it worked. Because it seemed to change. I had to watch it a few times to make sure I was definitely counting correctly, and I got it right.
While you're explaining it, I'm finding the footage.
So, basically, they have the 2 backs come in as like a 3rd row back behind you. You have the front row, you have the 2nd row, you then have the 2 backs come in, and then you have the number 8.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And the flankers, then, that are on the outside of the 3rd row back, slide forward onto the front row. So they essentially, by the end, have a 5-man front row. And the Tongan loosehead is struggling to stay on in the first place. But by the time they get to, you know, having 2 flankers in their face, I think it's Roy Radu.
Oh my God, you're right. There's 2 number 8s.
There's 2 number 8s.
I didn't even clock.
They've got a 10-man scrum.
They have. Wait, is that 3 number 8s? One of them might be slightly out of shot. You can't really tell on the camera angle. But you're right, it's a 10-man scrum.
They've got 2 number 8s and then a super number 8 behind them.
That's remarkable. I did not think I'd see the day of the super number 8, which I think is the, I think you've coined that phrase. That's the official one. When we were about 11 and 13, we made up the position fullback plus, which is
in our rugby behind the goal line.
Yes. It's in our rugby jargon, that is an official term. I think the super number 8 is now a new position,
yes,
which we are coining. Talk about hybrids,
Eddie. Do you know who the only super number 8 in the Rugby World Cup is?
It's the bear from the fucking Revenant.
The bear from the Revenant. The bear from the Revenant is the only super number 8. And he was denied a try. He was denied a try. The bear from the Revenant could have scored a try from the position of super number 8 if not for Valu, the Tongan captain and father of future Japan international Ivalu, diving offside into the scrum as he's about to grab the ball on the try line.
Oh, I tell you what, like, he could have got Leo on him.
Yeah, he should have.
Could have got Deadpool on him. He's got really hard mates.
I mean, he's got, yeah, I mean, all of the Justice League? Come on.
Exactly. You don't want to mess with him. And that's not just because he's, playing number 8. He's got some very hard mates.
Like Eddie Evans, the loosehead. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a greatly entertaining try, even if it is tragically a penalty try at the end.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now you've explained that, that makes means a lot more to me. Leo DiCaprio was 13 at the time of this World Cup.
I was going to say, this is probably about the time of What's Eating Gilbert Grape, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I forgot he was in that.
Yeah, yeah. So, Leonardo DiCaprio...
I know more about films than I thought I did, judging by the last couple of episodes of this podcast.
I've seen at least four of them.
I think I probably have.
So, okay, no, Leonardo DiCaprio makes his first film in 1991.
Okay.
So it's a few years before that. Okay. The world did not know him.
No.
Then What's Eating Gilbert Grape and This Boy's Life in 1993, which kind of is two breakthroughs.
It is cool that the bear from The Revenant, the guy who played him, was once more famous than Leo.
I mean, it's just incredible, isn't it? Yeah. It's not as famous as Tom Woods, the most famous lacrosse
player. No, of course not. But look, is... we can all strive for those, those heights
dream
one day.
To one day be as famous as Tom Woods, the famous lacrosse player.
Yeah, yeah.
There's probably a lacrosse podcast out there doing the Lacrosse World Cup that's going... He also played rugby.
Yeah.
What even is rugby? Famous rugby player.
Yeah, doubt that's real. So, Gareth Rees misses another drop goal. It
happens regularly, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's some good attempts, but...
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, as I say, like, Canada have a decent game plan at this...
This
yeah.
whole way, Mark Wyatt has taken the kicks of goal instead of Gareth Rees.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, I don't know why.
Yeah. He's always spraying them like spectacularly to the sides.
Yeah.
Gareth Rees is striking the ball beautifully out of hand off the tee.
And like so Wyatt misses his first three shots at goal.
Yeah.
And then three of his first four. The one he gets is a conversion between the posts.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, you know what? Why don't I take a shot from the halfway line?
Yeah.
When I have shown no aptitude for goal kicking so far.
Not a clue why he does that.
Nope. I just wrote in my notes, well, what were you expecting?
Yeah, literally, literally. And that happens two or three times, doesn't it? That Wyatt
attempts from
ridiculous shots at goal.
From Saturn, as Sam would have put it.
Yes, yes. Good old Sam Lana.
There is a moment, though. I think it is the drop goal you mentioned. Sorry, yes. I want to pull back on. There is one of the finest moments of tactics in this Rugby World Cup, which is Canada have a scrum, right? They drive the scrum forward.
Yeah.
As the scrum stops going forward, the number eight picks it up and turns his back into the opposition flanker who's trying to tackle him.
Mm.
And then all the forwards snap on and form a maul immediately off the scrum. So then
yes.
take that forward a few metres until it stops again, at which point they just pass it back to Rees, who tries a drop kick from the corner. And those are just really effective tactics.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that was fun was seeing just how absurdly massive the in-goal areas were in this ground. They were like 20 metres, and it's just like, mate, if you're inside the opposition's 22, just grab out along the floor. As long as you've got a fast winger, you're scoring every time.
Yeah.
Unless they've got a fullback plus.
The other thing I have written down, I mean, I've got two things written down between here and halftime.
Mm-hmm.
One is rugby is so shit.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was in relation to.
But agreed.
And the other is, how is every Canadian shirt so clean?
Yeah.
Because they're wearing white, because obviously both teams normally play in red. And every Canadian back has a very clean shirt.
Mm. It's a good point, actually.
For an all-white kit.
Like, you can forgive Old Bear over here because he had to change his shirt at one point. Everybody else?
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Old Bear conjures up the children's book, Old Bear.
Yeah, who he's not played yet. But very good at playing bears, as you say, so
could
happen at some
point. Could play him next.
Shoot, let's talk about halftime.
Yes!
Because we are lucky enough to be given a direct camera... Basically straight up the throat of Hans de Goody.
Yes. Just straight in his face.
Yeah, right in the old schnoz.
Reminiscent of, you remember the Rio Sevens in the Olympics?
Yes.
And when they put the cameras right there and you hear the team talk.
Yes.
And I believe it was during the Women's USA, their quarterfinals.
It was indeed.
Where the coach shouted, I need level 3 thinking.
Which then became like a huge meme off the back of that, didn't it? Level 3 thinking.
For about a year or two afterwards.
Yeah.
Level 3 thinking. And I was there at the time, and it was a magical moment watching all of those games back to back on incredibly hot, sweaty days.
Oh, man. That was a great series, that Olympics.
Yeah.
Both the men's and the women's tournaments were both brilliant.
And, yeah, it was reminiscent of level three thinking as we hear Hans de Goody start talking. And we know exactly what motivated Sophie to become as good as he was.
Yes, yes. I say, I feel like I heard our good friend Linebreak Sav reference level three thinking on Twitter like 6 months ago and just feeling blown away. Do you want me to... I've got here the clip of Hans de Goody's team talk half-time. Should I play it?
I do think they do say they asked all the teams if they could get in the tunnel and listen to their talks at half-time. And Canada were the only team who said yes.
Predictably.
There's two reasons for that, yeah. One, incredibly polite people. Two, that means that they're not going to swear.
Yes, yeah. I was thinking the whole time, like, when's he going to drop an F-bomb? Like, how far away?
He doesn't. One of his teammates does in the background.
I didn't even
clock
that.
He doesn't himself.
Yeah. Okay, so here is Hans de Goody's halftime team talk.
That moves forward, right? You tackle that guy, your heart is rocking, he's going back. They've already had two injuries, their number eight's hurting now, there's other guys out there on their field that are hurting, they are not that... So.
By the way, I'm just going to pause and say now, people listening to this podcast, imagine this is Kermit the Frog from now on.
Keep punishing them. The more that goes off, the easier our chances are of scoring. I believe that number eight's still hurting, so when we get in their end, run some back up. All right, some good ones. Make him tackle you. It doesn't matter if we pass the ball. Make him tackle you. Make him crunch. We'll put it back, and we'll take it on from there. There's been some great forward efforts where we just keep driving and driving and driving. Work to stay on your feet. Work to get that ball back. I believe that three where we were close to the touchline should have kept going. I don't think we should have worried about the touchline so much as just the drive. We had him. We had the ball. What more do you want? It doesn't matter if we're a yard from the touchline. We're driving forward anyway, okay? We've got these things to do. Let's do them. Some great work out there, guys. It's really been positive. Let's keep it up. 40 minutes to go of everything you've got. Come on.
Come on, boy.
Come on. You're making history right now. Come on.
Fucking right.
On three. One, two, three.
He does sound more like Kermit the Frog than the current Kermit the Frog.
He does. He really does. I just really like the, hey guys, we're pulling some great tackles. I also skipped off the bit where he goes, we need to kick the ball. We need goal tactical kicking. I'd rather you put it out of play 10 meters downfield than kept it in play 50 meters downfield. Anyway, Rubber Ducky, you're the one. You know, that bit, the team talk,
where
I skipped off.
It becomes Ernie instead of
Jim. Yeah. Hey, Brute. Yeah.
Him saying their number eight's hurt, so let's go and injure him further.
He said it twice.
Yeah, he's really, really fond of that point. Razzie Erasmus would like him.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I don't doubt that's been a... That definitely happens nowadays.
Oh, of course it does, of course it does.
I feel like it probably died out slightly about 7 years ago and has come back around massively.
Yeah, 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 yeah. When rugby actually got carried away with the whole values thing and then realised, actually, no, we still should be dickheads, shouldn't we? Again.
But it sounds amazing hearing someone say it.
Yeah.
Right? Like Erasmus.
Broadcast on television as well. Like
Erasmus and Chasing the Sun saying he did that and like he went out to injure other players.
Mm.
Right? And then hearing him say that just here. I've never had any doubt that kind of thing happens.
Yeah.
Players, target players who are hurting.
Yeah, I think it happens at all levels. I mean, I know it happens at amateur level where, you know, you see like this guy's picked up an injury. He's knackered. Let's run around him.
And like, it happened in the Romania game earlier in this World Cup in 87, where one player was injured, so they just ran at him off a scrum and he couldn't make
it. Yeah. I often find that, actually, if somebody's like semi-injured, you almost want them to stay on the field.
Yeah,
so you've got an advantage over them. You've got, you know, if they've got a 10 who's limping, you can get on the outside of them. You don't want them to go off and have somebody fresh come on.
Yeah.
Because you often see, like, there's a lot of, like, really super competitive players. The amount of times we've seen Dan Bigger go down injured with something that looks serious and then he's just got up and played on. Johnny Sexton, likewise. These players are, like, super competitive and you kind of worry as a fan of theirs, like, is he going to be okay to make tackles and that sort of thing.
Immediately after that, the last thing he says after they do the huddle and the 1-2-3 Canada thing, is he says, Spike, you got anything to add to good old Arachnid himself?
Yes.
To which Spence McTavish replies, nah, that's fine.
Yeah, I really like that. Because, like, it often happens where you go like, oh yeah, no, you said it all. You're spot on. Just, no, I'm
or
good.
They just say something generic like, you know, yeah, big tackles, as he said. Or
yeah.
But whereas instead he goes, no, it's fine.
No, it's all right.
Or he did an okay job.
Yeah.
It really undermines the motivation he's just
putting. Yeah, I love it. I love it because he's putting this really heartfelt speech that you just kind of hear like, no, thanks for asking. No.
But he's like, no, the way he says, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, your speech, that'll do. Your speech yeah. Let's crack on. Let's get on with this. The commentator then says his wife presented him with a baby this week. And I like to imagine him going, well, what do you want me to do with this? Just being like, here's a baby. Do you like it? They're like, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
That goes on to be Canada under-20s player Jake DeGoody.
Yes, yes. I immediately thought, like, oh my God, is it going to be... But then remembered how young Sophie is. But it's cool nonetheless that they said that, because it's interesting getting that kind of perspective on things.
That would have been mad to think if it was...
Yeah.
If I'd put that together at the
time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, second half kicks off, and it does not take long for Canada to get going in the second half, as... What, probably about 3 or 4 minutes into the second half, Vicen scores the opening try of the half, and Canada go 20-0 up, which is...
Just another really nice move.
Yes, yeah.
It meant, like, really well worked.
Yeah, Woods with a great Canada, step.
Yeah, Canada kick a lot of ball, but when they run it, as I think, Gareth Rees does a really good job of identifying this, Ian Stewart as well, the two halfbacks, of identifying when it's on, they go.
When they don't drop the ball, they're good, Canada. Same can be said of basically anyone in this World Cup because the defence is that poor. But yeah, this is the one as well where, like, he clearly doesn't ground the ball, but vibes and no TMO. So
yeah, who cares?
Yeah. So yeah, that try is scored by the only salmon fisherman in international rugby. And then the commentator goes on to explain his nickname, which is quite interesting. Did you hear this?
I probably did, but I didn't.
His nickname is Buff.
Oh, yes.
His nickname is Buff because his name is Vicen, which rhymes with bison, which then becomes buffalo, which then becomes buff.
Very much arachnid to spike logic there.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, Buff, as he is known, get it? Because his name sounds like bison, which is like buffalo. Anyway, yeah, he scores that try, the greatest salmon fisherman in the tournament.
Undoubtedly. Absolutely, undoubtedly.
Yeah. I bet he'd be good at white baiting. Sorry.
I wonder, yeah. I wonder if he could ever take that up. I wonder if there's anyone that would know anything about that.
Yeah.
I wonder what Rob Frame's nickname would be if he goes from frame to picture.
Yeah, to pick,
then
maybe.
Picture becomes pick.
Yeah.
Then pick becomes dick.
Oh, I was going to say guitar pick, but you beat me.
Guitar pick, yeah, okay. I just guess his name becomes dick.
So he goes from frame to picture to pick to guitar pick to dick
to penis to pen is
to penny to penny rabbi
to penny rabbi to ravioli
to pasta to El Paso.
Hold on, I thought we were taking in turns to do
this. Sorry,
to pasta to El Paso.
Oh shit, he's done me. To elephant.
To White.
And his nickname is White.
His nickname is White. No, to Stephanie, because of Stephanie White.
Oh, yeah,
White,
yeah, to Goody. Yeah.
And he then becomes Stephanie, which then goes to Lady Gaga. And he becomes...
Radio Gaga. Yeah.
He becomes Radio Gaga. Rob Radio Gaga.
Yeah, It's a good nickname, that.
It's a good nickname. Yeah. It's a good nickname, Rob Radio Gaga.
By the end of this tournament, we will have similar nicknames for the whole Canadian national team.
Yeah, I mean, we could keep going.
But
we won't.
No.
Rob will rock you, you know. He's a fine player and finishes try very well.
Yes.
Tonga then score a shambles of a try.
They do, don't they? From what is described as a smart line-out move by the commentator, which is accidentally catch the ball.
Yeah, I mean, the ball's basically overthrown.
Yeah, and for once not intercepted.
Yeah. There's one point in the second half where the Tongan hooker clearly tries to throw it as hard as he possibly can, and Funavaka just, like, absolutely pelts it to a Canadian player nearby because he just massively overthrows it with no reason to do it.
Yeah.
This one he doesn't. I think it's kind of a fluke, but it lands at the tail. And it's Valu himself, isn't it?
Yes, he's the one who scores the try, There's actually a really good pickup off the floor by Fifita for a horrific offload.
Well, so there's a terrible offload by Levia.
Yes.
who does, yeah, tries to offload the ball, and Wyatt does the most deliberate knock-on you will see.
Right?
For decades.
Yeah, yeah.
He just slaps the ball away.
Yeah, no, no, it's very, very deliberate, and he tries to spoil the try. And I would nearly say that would have been a penalty try if not.
Oh.
Given the try was actually scored, so
as,
yes.
It's not as good a penalty try as a tennis scrum,
though. No.
So...
No. And penalty tries are shit anyway, they're overrated. But
yeah, so no, so Levi then... Sorry, Levi is the one that picks it up afterwards, isn't it?
Yes.
He picks it up, he is stopped an inch short.
Oh, Fifita, sorry, Fifita. It's dropped an inch short, yeah.
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 And then Valu picks it up and dives over.
Yeah. And in fairness, I think he did deserve a try, Valu.
Valu played well.
He did. He really worked. And he looked like a real flanker rather than trying to be a show pony all game. He reminded me a little bit of Nili Latu in terms of Tongan grafting number sevens.
I can see that.
Yeah, there was that kind of side to him. And I liked him. I think he deserved his try.
Then right from the kickoff, Tonga start again. And they almost score. They create a really nice move, and then they just bomb the try.
You said it's a really nice move. Like, all of the offloads were both fantastic and caught. That was what was incredible. Yes. They actually catch, like, three passes in a row, which is, like, unheard of at this point. And then, sadly, the last pass goes into touch, or is pass forward, isn't it?
Mm.
But, like, it was like Tonga are playing some decent rugby now. And like for like a 5-10 minute stretch, they were kicking quite smartly. There's a point where Fifita goes for the crossbar challenge, which is quite fun. they throw some really nice offloads, make some nice breaks. There's a really nice bit where Liava makes like an intercept and then steps around people. And it's a proper like winger's run that he has. And it's amazing that it took me this long to clock that he's a winger, not a 10.
Mm.
He steps around a couple of people and does this really lovely offload. And they have a really great passage where they're trying to offload everything. And a lot of them are actually sticking.
And then, you know, eventually one doesn't.
Yes.
And it all kind of falls apart.
Yeah. But you know, it's good this 5-minute period where Liava's just constantly making breaks. And as I say, great player, not a 10.
They then also have a really nice moment shortly afterwards where they spot there's a lot of space in behind because Mark Wyatt has just gone for a doll. He's just, you know, popped out to have a chat, you know, he's off to discover his own nickname.
Yeah.
And the ball, as I say, the Tonga thump it long, and the ball from this kick bounces so high it bounces over the crossbar and over the try line, at which point Wyatt gets back and grounds it.
Yeah. It's spectacular the height he manages to get on that.
On that bounce.
Yeah.
I mean, just an incredible moment.
Yeah.
There's a running thing throughout this game, right? Ian Stewart, who obviously was a centre playing scrum half.
Yeah.
Right? At about 5 of the scrums, when Reese is waiting for the ball, he does the most force dummy from the base imaginable.
I love that. I love that because like he's not usually a scrum half, is he? So
no.
It feels like he's like, oh, this is what David Kirk did on TV the other day.
He does it with his full arms and his hands like stretch out like slabs.
Yes.
Like no hands around the ball, pretending to pick it up and throw it
and
back.
No one falls for it.
No one falls for it because it looks stupid. And he does it about 4 times.
Yeah. There's one in particular that's very funny, which I'll come on to later. But there's some great moments with Stewart where he really looks like a cohesive scrum half and he passes well and stuff and he makes nice breaks. But there's points where he just looks utterly clueless. And I'm here for it because it happens to the best of us.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the Kansas scrum is so on top, it does have a very easy job.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, there's one Kansas scrum in the second half where they drive through the Canada pack, the Tonga pack, to such a degree that only the front row is still attached. Like the locks, the blankets, and the number 8 all come off. And the referee blows a penalty and goes, like, we can't continue the scrum. It's free.
You say that. Two of the front row are still attached. Their hooker is stood up 10 metres away from the scrum. He has somehow managed to wriggle his way out of the scrum. And he like then runs back around to rejoin it like a mall. So he gets... So the hooker is the one who was penalised for being offside at a scrum where he is in the front row. He does the signal for offside. And the commentator says, the hooker was offside there.
Well, because one of the commentators started complaining, why did they stop this scrum for the penalty?
Yeah.
And I think it's just because there's no players left.
Yeah, because they would have gone the whole way, like, with that scrum and scored the try.
You've got 8-on-2 at that point.
Yeah. Of course they were going to score the try. But, yeah, and of course they've got, you know, big old Bear controlling the ball at the back. But, Yeah, I think it probably was a safety concern, wasn't it? Like, we've got to just give you the penalty here now, lads. This is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. It was a safety thing, as much as anything. Canada opted for goal, which was stupid.
Yes, because Mark Wyatt.
Yeah.
And his God complex.
And then, right, so after this kind of all kicks along.
Yeah.
There is, well, I think, one of the finest moments of the game.
Oh, I think I know the one you're about to talk about. Yes.
Most discussion.
Yes.
The bomb into the 22.
Yeah.
So Gareth Rees hangs a massive bomb into the 22, right?
Yeah.
And to Etiaki's credit, he actually catches this one.
It's Vaipulu on this occasion.
Oh, is it Vaipulu?
Yes.
Okay.
Who's come onto that wing. Yeah, he catches it brilliantly. He rises in the air, he catches it, and he calls the mark.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't rise in the air. He doesn't jump.
Oh, do you not jump?
Stood on the floor the whole
time. Okay, stays
on the floor the whole time.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, you're
and
right.
And it just like lands in his bread basket. He takes it and he calls the mark.
Yeah. Which for some reason nobody else has done in this World Cup.
No.
He's the first player to ever call a mark in a World Cup.
Is he? Is that the first one?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been a couple. No, there's definitely a few more. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there's absolutely.
Fair enough.
I remember talking about moments that.
Okay. My bad.
But yeah, so he calls the mark, but not before Paul Vysen. Can absolutely splinter
old salmon boy himself.
So Vysen in the first half gets penalised for the stupidest early tackle imaginable.
Yeah,
where the referee blows the whistle before he's made the tackle.
Yes, he's committed to it. Predictable. Yeah,
but this
that's
time,
a dick of the day nomination, isn't it?
Yeah, this time he absolutely thunder twats his way into the ball. And, yeah, really, really flattens Vaipulu.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a really big hit. And, like, I do think he's committed to it.
Yeah, sure. And he doesn't necessarily know he's going to call the mark, of course.
No. The referee calls it as the mark of the free kick and he goes to get up. At which point, Vaipulu just punches Vysen in the face.
He just kind of really calmly rolls over and then just... punches him straight, and like it's an undercut, it's an uppercut, isn't
it?
I suppose he comes underarm, and then he's square in the face.
Yeah, square in the face.
At which point the referee stops and sort of says, "That's naughty. You shouldn't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
you don't like that at all."
And you see a nice little replay of the punch square in the face. As I say, cameras cut back. Canada has scored.
Yeah.
And what I like about this is clearly, like, this is one of those where they've tried to take a quick tap while the defence are all, like, either in the middle of a fight or trying to console their guy, have their backs turned, whatever. So the scrum half just goes, oh, yeah, I'm going to go here and score. Because a lot of scrum halves are just very cheeky like that and will just try and get it. And the referee would double blow the whistle, go, no, come back, you can't do that. But I think that on this occasion, our friend Clive from Wales just kind of went, no, you just punched a guy in the face. I'm going to give him the try.
Yeah, we're going to let this run
off. I'm not going to have sympathy for you for that.
I'm not sending you off, but I am going to allow their scrum half to be a little shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's only
but
fair.
He's a centre. It's the first time he's ever tried this.
It's true. It's very true. And it's Pat Palmer who scores in the corner, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's it.
The commentator's talking about... He says something like, oh, he extends his arm into the face. It's like, mate, he punches him.
Yeah.
He punches him square in the face.
Yeah.
And he says, and then Pat Palmer scores. Very calmly.
It was literally while I was writing it down, I was saying, like, oh, he takes the mark and then throws a punch. Wait, Pat Palmer scored. Yeah, and then after this, it's pretty much Canada just wrapping the game up, isn't it?
The thing that happens here as well is they finally give Gareth Rees the kicking.
Yes.
And nails the conversion.
Yes, and a penalty straight afterwards to send them up to 27-4, which is quite an emphatic win, winning margin already. You know, they've gotten one more try after this, haven't they? But
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It's emphatic. There's a point where Eddie Evans drops the ball over the try line, which is automatic dick of the day mention. It was after a really nice flowing move as well. And in fairness, I think he was right to try and place the ball over the line himself, but sadly couldn't make it.
Yeah, just short. I mean, again, something you can't really blame them for.
No, of course not. Especially as a prop as well.
Another point I want to make.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, no, it's such a nice move in the lead-up to that.
Yeah.
He looks very excited. He then looks gutted with himself, but...
Yeah.
And there is no real support around him, so he couldn't really have given it.
Yeah, naturally.
But the Tonga fly half on every restart takes so long.
He does, doesn't he? He has a really weird kicking technique as well, because he comes from in front of the ball to kick it off his tee or his sand or whatever, and kind of curls his leg round. So he stood on the other side of the halfway line when he kicks the ball. It's very strange.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Is it kind of like a 200-degree angle?
But it's sometimes he is... Like, everyone is lined up and ready, and he is taking about 45 seconds to take the kick, as well as taking a kick at goal.
Yeah.
When he's kicking back off.
And they're never, never that good, are they? The kicks. No, not to justify that.
I mean, none of them go out on the full, which has happened a lot.
Very true, yeah.
So maybe they
one
are.
Goes not
maybe
10,
I think. Standard. He was like, you know, like when Kieran Hearn started doing restarts in sevens.
Yeah.
And he gets such height on the ball, everyone thought it was a revolution.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a bit like that. He was sure. That. Because he does, right, after Canada's next try, for the last try, he takes a dropkick restart, which I believe is the first one in this World Cup.
Right. I didn't clock that. You see, because like, naturally,
like 2 minutes to go,
my brain always has to acclimatise to seeing them kick off the tee every restart.
Yeah.
So naturally, when they do a dropkick, I don't go, oh, that's cool.
So Laivala takes the first ever dropkick restart at a Rugby World Cup, which is something we would absolutely take for granted. Normally.
Yeah. First of very, very many. Fair play. So should we talk about Canada's last try before we wrap up?
Yes.
Because this is probably the pick of the bunch for me. Gareth Rees does a really like delightful chip over the Tongan defensive line. We've missed a try.
We've missed,
have we?
Vyson's other try.
Did Vyson get another try?
Vyson scores two tries, yeah.
Talk me through it.
There's a succession of offloads, and the ball is going wide, at which point all the defence drift off Gareth Rees because he has shown no signs
of course.
The entire game.
Yes.
He throws the dummy, goes right through, sudden burst of pace that you wouldn't known he had in him.
Really, really impressive attack by Rees, that is, isn't it?
And then he times the pass perfectly, floats over the fullback as he drifts onto him.
It's a really good try,
for Bison to run it in.
Yeah.
Really nice try.
Yeah. Delightful from Rees, throwing that dummy when it was actually on, because the guy had actually drifted off him rather than just needlessly hoping they'd fall for it. It was very impressive because he'd saved that one attack back the whole game.
Yeah.
And really showed what he was made of at that point. I think it was a really good way of rounding out a good all-round performance by Rees. As I say, before this last try, where he does that chip over the defence.
Mm.
And it's a delightful chip that he puts over.
Yeah.
Straight into the hands of Vyson, who then offloads it back to Rees, who's come on the outside, run a really nice support line, and time the pass perfectly to Palmer, who runs it in.
Yeah. Really nice taken. Two really good finishes by Palmer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like really
Palmer has a good game, actually. He's clearly quite fast.
Good.
Yeah.
Talented. Yeah, very fast guy, clearly. They talk about him being the fastest man of the Canada team.
Yeah.
And I don't know how relative that is when you look at their forwards play.
Sure.
But, you know, there's a few players, like Woods clearly has a turn of pace on him.
Yes.
And so does Gareth Rees, frankly, when you see him go.
He does. That surprised me, you know, because he's always talked about as just, like, a good goal kicker and just tactically quite a good player. I was quite surprised that he's quite agile.
Yeah. There's another moment where shortly after this try, because there's a few minutes after that try by the end, the commentator says, Ennis, loose man, which is just a funny phrase for the bear from the Revenant. And then at the last scrum, before we get to the end, I mean, in the lead up to this scrum, there's an overlap and Gareth Rees just kicks it straight out on the floor.
He just couldn't be bothered to make a decision at that point, could he?
No. Because he's so... Kicking is his first instinct, very clearly. But up until then, I think he's decided the moments to pass quite wisely. And there he just kind of goes...
Phew. He kind of goes with the trend of the other fly halves at this World Cup, doesn't he?
Yeah. Kicks it out on the full. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Just let it go, Gareth. Come on. You don't need to do this. Tonga then throw the line up not straight, which apparently we're refereeing now. Thanks, Clive. And we then hear the Canadian pack... One of them shouts, come on, guys, let's grapple.
I didn't hear that. That's
also, right, I did hear, I was paying attention to this, a few times you can hear the Canadian lineouts call.
Yes.
Right?
I didn't crack it this week.
I'm pretty sure they had the same lineout call as the USA.
Really?
That they call two numbers, and the first number in the second lot is where they're throwing.
Oh, okay.
With one exception, where they throw to number four, which is the scrum off running in down the front.
Oh, I did clock that, because he held up the hand signal of four, didn't he?
Yeah.
At the front of the lineup. You see, because I did clock that he said, like, 43, 13, and then they throw it to one at the front. So that must be it.
The same thing later, it was like 17, 22.
Right.
And that went to two.
Okay. So with one all in terms of cracking lineout calls at this World Cup, or World Cups generally. This can be a feature that carries on. I like this. I'm here for this.
We can get Victor Matfield on as a guest and see how quickly he can get them all.
I don't think we can.
We can ask. You know, I've got Brian Habana's number.
Yeah, yeah. Hi, Brian. Can you do me a quick favour?
No, it's not UO1. It's not UO1.
Yeah, it's your mate Victor, who's really good at line-out calls.
He loves line-outs, doesn't he? He loves line-outs.
Really
does. Talking about line-outs.
He does. He's been waiting for the official line-out podcast.
Maybe we can get all of the goodies together to talk about line-outs.
Maybe we could. Maybe we could. With that, should we go on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Yes.
Where do you want to start?
Should we start with Dick of the Day?
Yeah, I think so. Weirdly, for a game that was so hectic, I found it quite hard to pick a Dick of the Day.
I think so too.
So I've got two nominations.
Mm.
One of them is Ian Stewart for, we were saying earlier, about him pretending the ball is out, doing that thing where you sway the hands to pretend the ball is out. There's one occasion where he did that, except the ball actually was out, and Valu then just dived on the ball and claimed it for his own, which I thought was really funny, because he fell for what Stewart was trying to get to fall for, except it was unnecessary, and he was actually entitled to the ball, so he actually helped the opposition. I thought that was quite funny. The other nomination I have is the commentator, Keith What's-His-Face, because in the first half, every single time Gareth Rees did something well, he attributed it to either McTavish or Wyatt. So he was always attributing Gareth Rees's like good things to
Wyatt,
other people.
Yeah.
And he kept calling him Wyatt. However, when he did that kick out on the fall, it's like, oh, Gareth Rees. Well, he's 19 years old. He's inexperienced. It's like, no, he's playing really well.
He's constantly saying, oh, Rees kicks it again, doesn't he? It's like Brian Moore moaning all the time.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to have to chase his surname, but Keith is my Keith. Dick of the day.
No, it's just Keith.
Just Keith.
It's our lad Keith.
Yeah.
You know, our Keith.
Yeah.
My Dick of the Day, I mean, again, as you say, it's quite a difficult one.
Yeah.
I think Mark Wyatt is a contender, partly for not being very good. There's a moment early on in the game, though, where he comes thundering in on a fullback line, like trying to hit it split between two.
Yeah.
Like, but hit between the 13 in wing. And as the ball is coming to him, his knee gives way and he stops still and sort of collapses. Oof. And falls backwards just before the...
That's not
good.
It's
not like an injury thing.
Yeah.
It's just like he times everything wrong and his knee goes from under him.
Yeah.
And it looks so shit. So there's big time that. But I think Dick of the Day has to be for me. Well, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, but... So we have Sione Hafefe, who comes off the bench for Tonga, was talked about. He was kind of the bigger name. He played more of the games for Tonga. It was kind of controversial. He was left out of the team, starting team.
Mm-hmm.
He comes on. He's normally number 8. He comes on in the second row. He then, at one point, Ian Stewart makes like a little snipe down the touchline. And instead of tackling him, he grabs him by the hair and pulls him into touch.
Oh,
and
I did see a kind
is,
of high tackle thing. I didn't
yeah,
thought that was
kind
what
of like he wraps it round his neck. And
oh
I
my
went
god,
back
that's
and was
bad.
Like, is it just around his neck? And it's like, no, the very tuft of his hair at the back, he pulls
that's
and
not
yanks
nice.
Him over the touchline.
That's not nice.
And that to me is to steal Lee from Blood and Mud's terminology. That is a cunt's trick.
Yeah.
And that is, for me, why he is Dick of the Day.
Automatically puts you in the bin, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's entirely fair.
And I mean, like, look. He easily could have been Vaipulu for punching a man in the face.
Of course
after
it could have.
The mark.
But he didn't try and get away with it, did he?
No, he didn't. He was just like, no, look, I hate you and I want to punch you.
I don't care if the referee's watching.
And in some ways, I respect that.
Yeah,
I respect
absolutely.
That the referee saw it and went, yeah, right.
Yeah, get on with it. Man of the match. So a few, I think Stewart was one guy who had a great game.
Mm.
As I say, there was points where Fifita looked good, even if it wasn't in a scrum half kind of role. I think that the best player on the pitch was Gareth Rees by a mile, but especially age 19 on his third cap. But I kind of feel like I have to give my man of the match to the Bear from the Revenant. And not Glenn Ennis, but the Bear from the Revenant.
The Bear from the Revenant.
So
the Bear from the Revenant.
Oh. I'm struggling to choose between the Bear and Gareth Rees, which is not a phrase I thought I would say on this podcast. But
so
go on.
I mean, I think there's a handful of content. I think Glenn Ennis does genuinely play well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he does. He does.
Maul,
he does.
Lad.
Yeah.
He loves to form a maul around him.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, Gareth Rees plays very well, looks like a proper fly half.
Yeah.
Which is a massive compliment for this era.
Yeah.
I think Hans de Goody has a good game.
He does. He does.
He kind of pops up quite a lot. Like, he's clearly very busy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there'll be another opportunity to give a second round man of the match in this World Cup.
That's true.
Most of them are broadly speaking very
it's
bad.
Very true.
And so I am kind of tempted by...
You did give Constantine man of the match for Romania, mind you, so...
I did, of course. What a prick that guy is.
Yeah.
To back up your point about the best wearers.
Mm.
So... But I think, for me, the standout player is Ian Stewart, the scrum half slash centre.
Fair enough.
I think every time he tries to do something, he does it very well. And he isn't always trying to do things, but generally, you know, which may be a problem for a scrum half, but generally, I thought he was the player who delighted and impressed me most.
Sure. Okay. So, who else is in this pool, in this World Cup?
Ireland and Wales.
Okay. So there's a chance Canada will play well again and maybe even win another game. So if they do, there's more chance Gareth Reese might get a Man of the Match nomination. So I'm going to give my Man of the Match to the Bear from the Revenant.
Cool. Okay.
Just because I can.
That brings us through to the end eventually. Almost 2 hours we've done.
This is a long episode today.
Almost 2 hours. On Canada 37, Tonga 4, from 1987.
That was a very impressively long episode. But I enjoyed it, and I hope that everybody else out there also enjoyed it.
Okay, well, I hope you'll join us for a hopefully equally enjoyable episode next week, where we will be looking at the first upset in the history of the Rugby World Cup, the first major upset. This was a bit of an upset. Tonga expected to win, but, you know, it wasn't a massive lead. The first time a team who were heavy favourites lost to a team who were massive underdogs.
Yes.
As Argentina play Fiji.
It should be very exciting. I now realise that this podcast is only 40 minutes shorter than The Revenant.
Which is a bloody long film.
Yeah, it really
it takes
is.
So long, that film.
Yeah, and that's for a film. This is for a podcast.
Yeah, at least you pause this, you know.
That's true.
At least you're not sat in the cinema staring at bloody Tom Hardy being cold.
Yeah, it's a valid point. But you are looking at Glenn Ennis, aren't you? So either way.
You're
so
thinking about Glenn
you
Ennis.
You can't escape him. But yeah. Okay, that's us, isn't it?
That's us.
Cool.
That brings us to a close.
Well, we'll see you next week, and bye.
Yeah, join us next week when you have a new hero of a fullback for everyone.
Yes.
We'll see you then. All right, goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.